Hello, I'm Al Rasmussen for the Missing People podcast. This program is a continuation of Kelly Jolkowski's series, Psychics and Missing People. Missing People podcast and Project Jason understand that many people believe that psychics are effective in solving crimes and finding missing people. Please keep in mind that the goal of this series is to help families understand techniques used by persons making these claims and make better decisions about the use of psychics. Project Jason and its volunteers cannot act as a clearinghouse for persons claiming success in using paranormal means to locate missing persons. We will be unable to respond to emails or other correspondence sent to us from persons making these claims or persons offering information about or referrals to psychics. We instead invite those persons to visit the James Randi Education Foundation at randi.org. That's randi.org. The story continues.
The Bitter End. Just when I thought I was safe from offers to use psychics in their search for my missing son, along came an insistent request from where I least expected it, a family member. Most of the family knew our position on using psychics, which came into being from our previous experience and that of other families we assisted in our work with Project Jason. To summarize, we do not say that it is impossible for a person to truly have psychic abilities, but the evidence points in the opposite direction, regardless of what they claim. There simply is no evidence that using paranormal means ever solved a missing person's case. On the other hand, there is a multitude of evidence that psychics' claims are nothing more than their own wishful thinking or even delusions. Psychics should never involve a missing person's family in their guest generation. If they truly believe they possess valuable information about a missing person, they should notify law enforcement in charge of the case. I was shocked when the relative mentioned above called me about a psychic she'd heard about. I will call this relative Jane so as not to harm family relations. Another relative was also involved, and I will call her Anne. Jane told me a story about how a friend of Anne's was a psychic, but she did not know it when they first met. Anne, her friend, and the psychic, Julie, went out to dinner. The story goes that Julie knew something about Anne's daughter that no one else could possibly have known. Anne told Julie the fact that she had a missing relative, and she asked if Julie ever did readings for missing persons cases. Julie, in fact, claimed to assist her local police in solving numerous cases. She offered to do a reading for Jason for a discount, $50. Anne called Jane soon after the dinner to relay the news about Julie's offer. Jane called me and approached the issue carefully. I told her that I was not going to listen to any more of these frauds' tales. She begged me, telling me that as Jason's relative, she felt she had to do something to help find him, and that she could not pass up this opportunity. I did everything I could to dissuade her, and reminded her of the great pain these stories, conjured up by psychics, caused. I reminded her that no psychic has ever solved a missing person's case by use of paranormal means. Jane was quite convinced that Julie was the real thing. I told her to do the reading with Julie, but she insisted it had to be with me. She promised me that she would only ask me this one time. I only relented to keep relationships intact. I did not want to do this. Every fiber of my being shouted no. I tried to think of a positive outcome, in that Jane might finally realize that she had been duped, not just by Julie, but by all of the psychics on TV that she was so enamored of. I told Jane there would be no second chances, and that even if the most famous psychic in the world offered a reading after that point, I would not do it. I asked her to think carefully about that, but she wanted to proceed. Julie and Anne lived in northern Kentucky, near Ohio. All of the communications prior to the reading took place between Anne, Jane, and Julie. Jane asked me for some possessions of Jason's. I was to ship these to Jane, who would in turn ship them to Anne. I did not choose Jason's most favorite things just in case I was to never receive them back. I asked Jane if Anne had told Julie Jason's full name. I told her to be sure to tell Anne not to tell Julie anything about Jason, including where we live or his last name. At first she did not, but then I heard she did later on, in plenty of time for Julie to do case research before the reading. Why she did this, I do not know. I can only assume that Julie asked Anne, and Anne complied. I was not very happy. If Julie was truly psychic, and she only needed a few possessions for the reading, as far as I was concerned, that was all she should get. The items were sent and received, and the date for the reading was set up. It was on a weekday evening. Anne was to meet at Julie's home and initiate 2 phone calls. I never knew why she could not set up a regular conference call. We had Julie on one phone with me and on another phone with Jane. I would not be able to hear what Jane said. Anne's job was to take notes about the reading. As a part of the discounted $50 fee, I would receive the notes Anne took, plus a tape recording of the session. I hoped that the reading would get over quickly. I had no more time to dwell on my anxieties about it, because just then the phone rang, startling me. Julie sounded like a pleasant, but yet firm-sounding woman. I wasn't going to be rude to her, but I also wasn't going to give her information freely, and nor was I going to feed into her guesses by giving any reaction whatsoever to anything she said. After all, she claimed to be a psychic who could communicate with the dead and see things the rest of us couldn't. She shouldn't need any validation from me. I'm going to spell this out for our friends with Christian beliefs. If a person claims to communicate with the dead and makes clear indication that the dead are not evil spirits, then the dead being communicated with must be in heaven and or be of God. Anyone in heaven is not going to lie or deceive. Therefore, if a spirit lies or provides incorrect information, one of 2 things is happening. 1, the spirit is evil. Or 2, the psychic is either under delusions or knows that he or she is a fraud. Beings in heaven do not lie or deceive. So then who is being deceptive? Ask yourself that question if you are a Christian. The rest of this tale could be easily summarized in 2 words, lies and deception. I will, however, continue on, because there are other lessons to be learned from the story. I took some notes as Julie was talking. I used those notes to report anything specific to law enforcement, as I had promised Jane. That way, if there was an actual lead, they wouldn't have to wait for the tape to follow up on it. Like all of the other psychics, Julie claimed that Jason was dead. Her story is as follows. Jason was walking along a 2-lane highway that was not a great distance from home. It was a fairly busy highway. Julie insisted it was Highway 27. That was the first deception. There is no Highway 27 anywhere near our home, period. A girl who called herself Vanessa was driving down the highway and accidentally hit Jason. She was scared and had no intention of calling anyone about it because she had just been released from jail, where she had been held on drug charges. She was afraid no one would believe her that it was an accident. She had also started a new job as a stripper in a nearby club, and she didn't want to lose her job. Julie described Vanessa as being fairly short and petite, with stringy dishwater blonde hair. Julie said that Vanessa pulled Jason down into the ditch and put him in a drainage pipe that was at the bottom of this ditch. There are 2 major holes in this part of the story. One is that on such a busy highway as Julie had already described, someone would have witnessed the accident itself, or at least seen Vanessa dragging him down into a ditch. Secondly, Vanessa was not a large person, so it is hard to believe that she could have quickly and easily dragged Jason into the ditch before someone saw her. I asked Julie about it, and she said that Vanessa had adrenaline flowing, so she was able to accomplish this. In Julie's story, Jason was still alive at that point. His injuries, if treated, were not fatal. Untreated, however, was a different story. Julie described him as fading in and out of consciousness. She said he did not have the strength to speak and that he could only move his lips. Vanessa put his body in the drainage pipe, but could not slide him all the way in, so his legs were left protruding. Vanessa then fled the scene of her crime. Another gaping hole in the story here is that the ditches by public highways are mowed several times in the summer. His disappearance was on June 13th, so the growing season was in full swing, but had months to go. The ditch would be mowed many more times. If Jason's legs were protruding, as she said, the mowers would have spotted him. They have to keep the ditches cleaned out as well, so even if one mower missed seeing him, persons cleaning litter from the ditch and the pipe would have discovered him. I verified this fact with my law enforcement. Had Julie altered her story to instead have his body left in a remote location, it could happen that he would not be discovered for years. But on a public highway, this would simply not be possible. Our ditches are not that deep here. Julie then launched into what I'll term as deflection. She provides a great amount of detail about things that simply do not matter. For people who are sucked into this type of thing, they would most likely be making strong declarations of belief and awe at Julie's ability at this point. There were three different times during the reading in which she did this. One must ask themselves how she can see all the great detail when it comes to the part of the story that doesn't provide a valid lead or anything of substance, but when it's time to provide helpful data, none is available. The spirits then stop delivering. Psychics will make all sorts of excuses about this. At the end of this reading, Julie would make an excuse for this that was perhaps even more unforgivable than her hideous deception itself. She then launched into at least a 45 to 60 minute monologue about how, coincidentally, a police officer came upon the scene after Vanessa left, but when Jason was still alive. According to Julie, the officer stopped to get out of his vehicle and stretch his legs. He was completely unaware that anything unusual had just recently occurred. She described the officer in great detail and even provided what she thought was his name. Julie spent at least 20 minutes talking about the officer's angel pin, which he wore on his lapel. She told the story about who gave it to him and why, and how it had so much meaning to him. I wondered why it mattered so much about his pin. It didn't, of course. It was just part of the deceit. Julie wanted to give me the perception that she truly could see things. My perception was that I could indeed see things, and what I could see was right through her made-up story. And in yet another error for Julie, she was quite firm in that the officer drove a green and white car. In my research, I found green and white law enforcement cars in some areas of the Southeast. Julie didn't bother to check and see what colors are common for law enforcement vehicles in this region. They aren't green and white. Even the forestry division doesn't have green and white cars. Jane insisted they must, in some effort to validate Julie's story after the fact. My law enforcement verified that there are no green and white law enforcement cars of any sort in this entire region. He also could not find an officer with the name Julie provided. Julie had indicated these events took place nearby. The story, quite apparently, was only inside her head. Even so, hearing what she said next took my breath away. No matter how many times I had heard these sorts of stories, and that in my heart I knew they were meaningless, it still causes so much pain. The visual placed in your head by the telling of the hard tale never goes away. Thinking and realizing that my son could have had some awful fate, even though it wasn't this one, is just too much for a mother's heart to have to bear. I shouldn't have to bear it. No one should purposely ask me to bear it. That is, no one who has a heart and morals themselves. According to Julie, the officer with the angel pin stood close to where Jason was in the ditch, having been stuffed into the drainage pipe by Vanessa after she hit him with her car. Jason relayed through the spirits to the psychic that the officer was so close by that he could hear the sounds of his police radio going off and the officer's footsteps as he walked slowly along the highway. Jason tried to call out to him, "I'm here! I'm here! Help me!" But he was so weak that the sound traveled no farther than his lips. Jason tried again and again, but could not make a sound loud enough to be heard by the officer. After a time, the officer went back to his car and drove away, leaving Jason alone to die. He didn't die right away. It was frightening, to say the least, to be all alone and helpless to save yourself. Jason did not have the strength to get out of the pipe. He didn't understand how this could have happened to him or why someone would do this to him. His attempts to call out decreased as his breathing became more labored. It was dark, and no one was there. And then the end came. Julie claimed, like others, that Jason was frustrated and wanted us to find out the truth and his body so that we could have the answers and then we could finally rest in our search. It made sense to me that if he was so frustrated, he would make sure that we were provided with enough information to find him. In addition, it was also logical that Jason and the spirits would make sure Julie had knowledge about him that she couldn't possibly have found on the internet or gleaned from Anne or Jane, so that we would believe her. Before I had a chance to ask that question, Julie went on another one of her long deflection monologues. This deflection went on for a good 30 minutes or more. Julie told us that Vanessa wears a pink thong and gold-spiked high heels when she performs at the strip club. Vanessa is not her real name. Oddly enough, the spirits could not provide her real name or the license plate of her car. However, the spirits could provide a highly detailed description of what the club looked like inside and out. On and on she went about all of the details of the building. In order to solve the case, Julie said that my husband and I, along with two friends she could not name, must go to the club on Friday or Saturday night. It must be windy when we go. My husband must stand outside the back door, and when inside the club, I am to approach Vanessa. As soon as she sees me, she knows who I am and why I am there. My guess is because we've had a fair amount of press in the area. She will then flee out the back door where my husband is waiting to stop her. If we stop her, she will confess to what she did. I asked how we were to find this strip club, and Julie launched into her third deflection, which was a visual trip to nowhere through Julie's mind, although in Julie's mind it was a trip to the strip club. This monologue was just like the others, numerous words but no meaningful information. Since Julie could not identify the club by name or address, I asked her if we were expected to go to every strip club in the area until we found Vanessa. Her answer, yes. She did claim that it was also on Highway 275, so I did do a search for that type of business after the fact, and there was nothing that could even come close to matching with an address and any number she had given me. In fact, while the reading was still going on, she had me get the phone book and start looking up businesses that sounded like Howie or Howard. She also said some other numbers, but nothing matched up to those either. There were a few business names that matched Howie or Howard. The first one I mentioned seemed to get Julie excited, but I told her it was not a strip club. One of the other places happened to be a Mexican restaurant we like. She hit on that one as well. That's it! I told her that it was a restaurant, and she said that sometimes these places were a front for strip clubs, and that they probably ran the strip operation on the weekend. I then told her that it wasn't possible because we knew the place and often went there on weekends. The phone book lookup was now over. I went back asking for a validation that Julie was actually speaking to Jason or to other spirits who were with him. I asked her the same question I had asked the shovel lady from a previous story. It was a simple question about something that Jason really likes that is not written anywhere, nor does anyone know the answer other than my husband and me. It's about a common item, and the number of answers is certainly not infinite. In fact, it is limited. Julie immediately shouted out the answer, but it was dead wrong. Jason does not like the item she mentioned at all. Julie didn't like the fact that she was wrong about this. Her tone changed to one of annoyance at me, although I had sensed it building for quite some time because I did not react to her stories and did not feed her information. Julie then announced to me and to Jane that my attitude was causing problems with the reading. I told her that it seemed to me that if she wanted me to believe her, that she could get one simple answer from Jason. She went to the phone with Jane and spoke to her for quite a while, and I could not hear what she was saying. Anne came on the phone and indicated the reading was over. At the beginning of the session, Julie had claimed that if her reading didn't help find Jason, she would get on a plane and come here and find him herself. She did not ever come, and she also never sent the tape or the notes that Anne took. Julie, along with her supposed spirit friends, did a very good job at one thing. Deceit. I was exhausted. Over 3 hours of my life had been wasted by this woman and her tall tales. Sometimes I wonder if they don't drag these readings out in an attempt to wear down the victim. It's a common mind control technique. If the victim is tired and emotionally worn down, they're going to talk and give information that they may not recall giving later on. They will also be more likely to stop applying logic to the story as it's laid out for them. I would venture to say that if any family member of a missing person were to take the guesses given to them by a psychic and take a practical look at the data, as I did, they will find little to nothing of value. I rested for a while, dried my tears, and then called Jane. She was very cool to me and admitted that she was angry that I wasted the reading because of my attitude. I asked her if she actually believed the stories that Julie told, and sadly, she did. I assured her that we would never find Vanessa or green police cars or Jason's remains in that ditch. I said it was ridiculous to expect my husband and me to go to every single area strip club on a windy Friday or Saturday night looking for someone who didn't exist. I told her I would do some preliminary research based upon my notes and let her know what I found. Of course, I found nothing at all that would help me locate my son. It took Jane several days to calm down and stop feeling so angry toward me. I was livid at Julie. I felt as if she was taking her frustrations out on me, which was just another cruel twist in the story. Not only did she waste my time with the reading and then the fact-checking afterwards, but she wasted the time of my law enforcement. She failed to research our area in an effort to be able to provide information that might actually make sense, even though it would still be just a made-up story. Worse than that to me was the fact that she caused problems in the relationship between Jane and me. She purposely drove a wedge in between us simply because she had a bad performance that night. Performance is the key word. That's all it was.
This has been a Missing People podcast production of Kelly Jolkowski's Psychics and Missing People. Participating voice talents were Sue Rasmussen as Kelly Jolkowski, Gene Levins, and me, Al Rasmussen. Audio adaptation by David Anderson. Produced and directed by Steve Branham. Original music created and performed by Ariana Kima. Copyright 2006-2007. All rights reserved, jointly by the Missing People podcast and Project Jason. For more information about Project Jason, please go to projectjason.org. For my co-hosts Kelly Jolkowski and Steve Branham, I'm Al Rasmussen with the Missing People podcast. Thank you for listening.